My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. With another episode. This episode is going to be another kind of standard format one where both of my guests answer the same question. This question, though, is kind of more of an evergreen one. We'll probably have this come back multiple times over with all the different guests just because this is a easy type of conversation to have, but it's also able to, you know, really pull from the reasons and the personal answers and the personal perspective as to, you know, why we've kind of selected these answers in these choices. Just to kind of get it out of the way, we're talking about GOAT games, so games that we consider the greatest of all time. So we chat about and pick one of our few from our lists. It doesn't have to necessarily be your number one definitive greatest game of all time, but just a game that you've played in the past that you love, that you consider to be one of the greatest of all time. So I talked with both my friend Austin and my friend Thomas. They're actually both brothers, coincidentally, too. So a little bit of a relationship there for my guest and a little connective tissue. Other than that, I don't got any much more news up top. My Kickstarter is still running for volume 4 of my 32-bit library series of books. So retro gaming fans, if you're into that, you can take a look at the show notes in the description below. You can see a link there. Sharing that link on social media or like posting it like does help. This has been a pretty successful book. It's going to be my biggest book I've made yet. So definitely any attention that can be brought to it and help promote it will go a long way. That would be much appreciated. I got about a little over 2 weeks left on that. And I will also be at Phoenix Fan Fusion this weekend for Memorial Day weekend out here in Arizona. I'll have a table selling my previous volumes of the books and meeting people, and I'll do my best to kind of promote the podcast as well. So if you're a new listener and you've discovered it recently, like leave a comment or a review or whatever it may be on the podcast platform you're listening on. Let me know how you found it and what you're thinking of it. But that's it. That's enough rambling from over the top. Let's get right into the conversation, and we'll kick things off with Austin. And then after the break, we'll go into our conversation with Thomas on our greatest games of all time. New convo, new episode. I got my lifelong buddy, Austin, here with us again for another episode. Before we dive in, I know you've introduced yourself before on previous episodes, so I want you to answer an icebreaker question so we get a reminder of a little bit of who you are. But if you could pick your favorite animal companion from a video game, who would you say your favorite animal companion is?
Ooh, wow. Favorite animal companion. I don't know. It might be because I have been watching the series, but the first animal companion that comes to mind is Dog Meat from the Fallout.
Having a good dog by your side is never a bad thing.
Yeah, that's always kind of cool. Even though he was kind of a weaker companion than maybe like the ghoul or other people, it was just cool to have him around. So a lot of times just roll with Dog Meat.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay. Well, that being said, let's just go ahead and jump into the episode because I think this will be a cool conversation to have. This is kind of one of those evergreen questions that it's going to get a different answer. And it doesn't have to be your number one, per se. It can absolutely be if you think you have a number one. But share a game that you consider to be one of the greatest of all time, your GOAT games. So just one of them, you know, doesn't have to be anything crazy.
You could obviously ask this multiple times and get different answers. Yeah,
I got a couple of goats.
Yeah, well, for sure. Yeah, there's no way to pick just one.
I mean, I do have a number one. I definitively will rank Final Fantasy VII as my number one favorite game of all time. Like, definitely is my number one. And I think I have, like, a top three or four pretty locked down. But, I mean, realistically, like, I mean, I don't know. I've added a lot of games over the last couple of, you know, decades, really, that could, if I really want to rethink that list, could it change?
So then how do you rank, like, the, what do they call those again? I don't know, the remake, the Final Fantasy VII remakes, or reimaginings, or whatever.
The first one's called Final Fantasy VII Remake, but yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Never were good at titling games, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Final Fantasy, it's the seventh one. You know, those remakes are great, and I just actually finished playing the second one called Rebirth, so Remake and Rebirth, and the third one, Money Down, it's going to be called Reunion, and if it isn't, it should be. The first remake, loved it to death. Like, it, like, just its tone and pulse, like the way that it weaved, like, new stuff in with the old stuff, seeing everything, like, updated and, like, a really, like, modern graphics and everything were great. I did all the side content. I did, like, platinumed it and played it through on hard mode, did all the VR challenges, like, everything. Absolutely loved it. Rebirth completely tested my patience of, like, how much is too much content-wise in a game. There was way too much packed in that game, and they only, like, reveal that there was, like, more than you think there's going to be, like, 60 or 70 hours into it. So I was playing at this mindset of, like, I'm going to get the Platinum Trophy and 100% complete this game. So for about 60 or 70 hours, I'm every new thing I come across, I was ensuring I was completing the mini game or getting to the hard mode or, like, whatever it was needed to be done. But then they just, like, at that point, like, you know, 14 chapters are in the game, like chapter 9 or so, they just, like, dump on so much stuff. It's no longer, like, drip fed to you. They just, like, hey, everything you've already done, here's a refreshed version or a level 2 or, like, some extra version that you can now play on top of some new games, on top of hard mode versions for some of the things you already tried, on top of the main storyline you already wanted to go through, on top of knowing, like, there's this extra side content, optional end boss, and then having to rebeat it all over again on hard mode. Like, I was just, like, I hit a point where I was, like, I'm 70 hours into it, and I feel like there might be 100 hours more of content here, potentially. Like, I just can't do that. Like, so, I saw it through and finished the game. Still, like, amazing combat, an amazing game, like, great story, because it is just, like, retelling beat for beat in that second one, like, all the major stuff from the game. Like, I absolutely love it. But I love it because of the nostalgia and love of the original game. So it definitely cannot, like, supersede that one in my mind. I'm that type of person who will, like, the nostalgia and the bias will constantly, like, make something elevated and, like, higher just, like, for that reason until I try and really critically think about it. That's why I think that, like, my list is solid now, but if I really sat down and tried to, like, poke some holes in it, I probably could and slot in some more modern games.
No, I just ask because I just think it's remakes make it, I don't know, interesting, I think, because then I just question, like, you know, a lot of people, like, Resident Evil 4 was, like, their favorite game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's, like, a really good remake of that game now. Yeah. So it's just, like, if you're thinking to yourself, like, do I want to replay the original that probably has some dated aspects to it, or do you want to play this, you know, revamped, you know, modernized version? So that's just kind of interesting just to think about. I guess, like, yeah, if you were going to, if 5 years from now you're going to replay, I mean, it's hard, you can't say for sure, but you would replay the original Final Fantasy VII, you think? Or do you think you'd play this? This?
I think for the Final Fantasy's sake, I would probably replay the original. But, like, the Resident Evil 4 point's, like, a really good point, because, like, it's weird to, like, remake a game that's, like, a GOAT type of game for a lot of people. Because, like, you this, like, are you, like, dancing with the devil and, like, you know, going to maybe ruin it or, like, you know, not get it right or something like that. But, like, it's weird because they got that right entirely. And it's, like, the same type of, like, action and gunplay, but, like, it's all modern, and, like, the little things they did to enhance it, like, weren't
changing
like,
things
it's, yeah, but yeah, that's one that, like, yeah, what do you replay? Like, if you were to replay that, like, oh man, I love Resident Evil 4, I want to go back and dive into that story, like, let me play, like, do you play the new one to replay it, or do you actually go back to the original, or do you, like, alternate, like, every 2 years you just play one or the other?
Yeah, I mean, that one's a unique one, and we're getting off topic. I know that one's a unique one, but then also I also come to mind it would be that the Dead Space one that they did too.
Yeah,
but, you know, I don't know.
It's so funny that those got remakes in the same year basically as each other.
Because
Dead Space is already just like, hey, we're going to take that Resident Evil 4 formula and, you know, I don't want to say they enhanced it. I like it more than Resident Evil 4, but I do think I just like the setting more. But, like, Yeah, and they were compared so often to each other, and Dead Space compared so much to Resident Evil 4 that a remake of Dead Space comes out the same year a remake of Resident Evil 4 comes out. So they're in the same conversation all over again. But yeah, anywho. Yeah, I don't know which one you replay, but you replay the one that you like the most, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
Well, what is a GOAT game of yours then?
Cool, yeah. So I think... it's funny saying this because this probably isn't even my favorite Super Nintendo game, but it is, you know, there's multiple GOATs, and so I'm going to...
Oh, ABC's Monday Night Football?
Yeah, dude. Sure, they didn't have the NFL license, but the ABC license was solid. no, I think I'm going to go with Super Mario World.
Yeah.
I think that one, you know, you still get the really tight, fun platforming, but it adds Yoshi, it adds the Cape Mario, which is different enough from the flying Tanuki, you know, Mario. But it also has like a lot of really cool, like, I guess you could say exploration, like, you know, lots of little secrets where you can find extra hidden levels that you might not find just going through the main game. And I don't really... Mario 3 maybe did that a little bit, but that really wasn't a thing. You could, like, warp around and stuff in Mario 3, but on a lot of those Mario World maps, there's, like, multiple hidden, you know, levels to get through that you just find through, you know, taking this alternate way through the ghost house or, you know, those sorts of things. So it had, like, the super fun platforming that was already, obviously, had been really good, added enough new to it, I think, that it didn't completely alter what was great about the previous ones, but then added that exploration that, you know, is kind of what at least what the 3D series now will kind of focus more on, I think, is that exploration part, and the 2D now mainly focuses on just like the kind of the platforming part. So like its influences are, I think, felt in both the 2D and 3D iterations that continue on in the series. And then on top of that, it's a game that like you can still go back to, like if you got a couple minutes, you can play a level or two and have a fun time with it, you know. Which isn't always the case with like a good 90s game. Mm-hmm. So I'll give it to Mario, Super Mario World.
Yeah, that's a good one. Like that's like it had like it had great at its time and still kind of now it is kind of timeless. But like graphically, like it was a great game. You know, it took advantage of the Super NES like a really colorful way. The music and soundtrack, you know, were great. Like all the little sounds and extra chimes, the overworld theme, all that was great. And yeah, just the amount of content, like you're saying, like for one, if you just went level by level and didn't really explore that much, like it progressed enough on like at a challenge curve that like, you know, you never felt overwhelmed. And then, you know, you eventually get to like, I always think like the test was before the Forest of Illusion. There's like those bridge stages, like on the way northern part of the map before you go south in the Forest of Illusion. Like those stages were always like a challenge. Like, okay, wait, here we go. Here we go. Now when I'm really getting like, you know, getting my ass kicked for a minute here, I got to like get to this like fortress to like get a save point here before I like lose it too much. But those are great. And then, yeah, like you said, the extra content, like the multiple, the levels that I think it was, if the dot was yellow or dot was red, like that signified if it had like a second exit,
it would be, yeah,
or a hidden exit. And then like the Star Road stuff and like all those extra challenges, like that was a game packed full of content and looks great, plays great. And like, even though I'm not like a personal player of it at all, but like the Kaizo, like Mario community who like plays like those like really challenging, like ROM hacks and like fan made like games, like it's all based on Mario World, like all the best ones and all like that community is all based on like Mario World, because just mechanically those games are just like super tight, super sound, like it's
super sound, yeah.
Timeless, and it's like it feels great and controllable, but also has just the right level of like balance of like give and take and super sharp design. Yeah, Mario World's is a good one for sure.
Yeah, and actually, yeah, I didn't even mention, I'm glad you did, the graphics. I mean, yeah, I think Mario 3 looks really good too for what it is, but this is a good step up and holds up better probably. And specifically, I was thinking about like the final boss battle with, you know, Bowser's like I don't know what there's probably a name for that, but his little, you know, floating mobile deal or whatever. And like the way it zoomed through like the screen, like at the time, I remember that being like kind of mind blowing, like, whoa, like I haven't seen a, you know, a 2D game like move and look like this.
That sprite scaling stuff, you know, zooming in and out, which is
really just like a clever way of manipulating, you know, it's just a graphical trick really. But at the time it looked really, really neat.
Yeah.
And just like, all of Mario's, appearances through his different costumes and stuff, all the little details and like the backgrounds of the levels. It was a really nice looking game, and obviously really good music. I mean, Mario games usually have really good music.
That's a good one. Good choice. Would you say that's the best Mario game of all time, or do you have a hard time defining 2D or 3D?
I would have to break it into the 2D and 3D, I think. And if I couldn't do that, then I would still say no. I would probably go with Mario Odyssey.
Mario Odyssey, really?
Yeah, probably is the best one.
I should probably give that a shot. Mario 64 I think my favorite, but Mario World would be like a tight, close number two. But I mean, I haven't played Odyssey, so who knows what will happen if I played that and enjoyed it. Who knows if there'll be an Odyssey 2 soon, you know? It's been a while. That was like a early Switch title, so it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, I would probably imagine that. Yeah, it's hard to imagine that not launching a Switch 2 or whatever the next Nintendo thing is.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I mean, I guess I'll share one of mine. I want to pick like one or two. I feel like I've referenced Final Fantasy VII and like Tony Hawk like already quite a bit. Again, previous episodes, like in just tangents and all stuff. Those two are definitely two that are up on like my top lists and stuff like that. But I will share, I'll go Metal Gear Solid 3, like the third Metal Gear game. I just think like Metal Gear Solid 1 is timeless, classic, you know, people will obviously call that a GOAT game itself, you know, but, 2 gets a lot of like love and attention. Like it definitely did things because graphically it did some amazing things, but also like didn't give in to like fan expectation and really just like kind of went off the rails with like, oh man, we're playing as a completely different character. Like what the hell's going on with this? So 3 was in a weird spot, like being on the same hardware. How do you really differentiate yourself from 2 previous like strong outings and everything? But like, I really just like the setting, like kind of going into the past and like being in like the jungle and everything like that with while it looks like Solid Snake, it's Naked Snake and who ends up becoming Big Boss and the precursor to like the Foxhound, like the in-game lore of it all. But like gameplay wise, it was cool just to take like it like broke. It was the last game that could do like that isometric like set kind of camera view that like the Metal Gear game would kind of was like 1 and 2 were really baked around. So much so that there was a re-release of it, Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence, that actually had a 3D camera that was fully controllable with the right analog stick. But you can just tell the game was designed with like, hey, you're kind of peering down each corridor, like a long hallway or like a long row of trees or whatever it may be. And like, you know, the enemy placement's going to allow you to like not be surprised by any of them, but also still have to play it smart. Really clever, like boss characters, like all the games, you know, you go through like a chunk of an area and ultimately end up facing a boss of some kind. It's usually like really creative, like, you know, Metal Gear Solid 1 having Psycho Mantis reading your memory card and making your controller vibrate. Like that definitely was the coolest external like game gimmick probably at that moment at time for sure. But Metal Gear Solid 3 had like some really unique boss battles too. Like there was a sniper battle with the End that like on first playthrough, like pre-internet days as well too, like without reading exactly how to do it or beat him or anything. I remember like taking nearly an hour to like just fight that boss, just a one-on-one sniper battle. Like, you know, like sneaking through 3 different maps and trying to like sneak up on him and like, how do you find him and everything? But then you go back and you like find the weird Easter eggs of it and all. And he's like this like really old like sniper who just waits, you know, waiting for his prey and everything. But he's just a very old person. If you save your game and fast forward, like if you waited X amount of days, like I don't know how many real like in Earth days that it needed to be, but if it's your system clock, like notice that it was like enough time had passed when you reload your save file against him, the boss battle's over and he's just dead because like time had passed. And so you actually can skip fighting him entirely just by using a real world in-game clock to like beat him and everything, which I thought was really unique. There's even a early on in the game, you see him right after a cutscene. He's in like a wheelchair being wheeled away, like way early on in the game. And actually, if you're quick enough, you can pull out a sniper rifle and actually shoot and kill him. And when you get to his boss battle, like Snake senses that something's off, like you should be fighting somebody, and you end up just like fighting against a, not in a boss battle, but there's just some few other generic like soldier grunts there as you work your way through the area. But you can completely skip it, which is kind of random. But yeah, I mean, of all the mechanics and everything, it's just the perfect balance of style, of like, the story doesn't like go off the rails. It's the most, I think, digestible Metal Gear story. And that's saying something, cause they're really crazy games. The pacing of it all, like the music and everything, it has like a iconic theme song and everything.
Oh yeah.
Snake Eater.
Yeah. So then would you say that that's your favorite Metal Gear game?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. I'd say three. Yeah. Three, and then, you know, one's got to be up there, you know, but then I was a big fan of Peace Walker, which is a PSP one as well, too. Yeah, and then five was, I thought was great. I mean, I like the series, so, but yeah, I would say three is my favorite then, for sure. Yeah. It's good stuff. But that's definitely my, that's one of my goats for sure. And yeah, I get just enough of balance, enough pacing. I guess also it's of its era. I don't know that you can go back and play it now and think the same thing, you know, like it's definitely, again, like I said, you can, there's a version with like a 3D controllable camera that maybe modern gamers would maybe like more, but there's still 20 minute cutscenes.
The pachinko version now, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
So, working on, yeah.
Just skip the whole gameplay and just, you know, let those loose slots, or whatever it is, whatever pachinko is. Yeah. There is a remake of that coming out. And I was in my mind was hoping it would be like Resident Evil 4 style, like, you know, like reimagining a game in a way that's like, you know, honors the original the right way. But from the more I read about it, there was some interview that like they're using the original like recorded like voiced acting and dialogue and everything, and which is cool, I guess. But then that just tells me like they aren't going to take any new liberties or adjust the pacing or change the scope of the story because they're using the original recording. Like you can't add to that. You could only remove, you know, when like things. Oh. So, and then looking at some of the screenshots more closely and trying to observe some of what I've seen, it literally is like, it looks like they have like the code or like the models and environments of the original game and are just slapping on like high resolution textures and replacing the character models with higher polygon count versions of them. So it looks like it's just going to be the same game, which again, for me, might be fine. But at this moment in my life, like, I think I would like some quality of life improvements and some updates just kind of like, you know, refresh or surprise me with it, you know, rather than just attempting to play the same old game again. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see how that turns out. Cool. Well, I guess, I mean, that really is. The question is kind of simple. There's really no debate or discourse there. I mean, I'm not going to convince you yours is wrong, and you're not going to convince me mine is wrong. Those were just two games that we consider to be GOAT games for each other. Yeah, so we'll probably wrap it up there, and we will have you on another episode, Austin. So thanks a lot for joining me.
Thank you.
Welcome. I don't know, like, how do you just make this sound like it's just a genuine flow of conversation? Welcome to another conversation, Thomas. Flowing and working naturally. The listeners are not going to just think this is awkwardly jumping into it, nor is our actual conversation just awkwardly jumping into it. But welcome to another episode.
Of course, we've been talking for a while now. Everything's just flowing smooth.
classic cash conversation over here.
Uh-huh.
Well, you've already been on multiple episodes, so no reason to introduce yourself, but Thomas, lifelong friend. My dogs are barking, too. If you hear that, I don't care. It's going to go on the episode.
Oh, you've been walking around a while? Your dogs are barking?
Yeah. My dogs are, actually, I did just get home from work, so my dogs are also literally and figuratively barking. But yeah, rather than introduce yourself, I'm going to give you an icebreaker question. So
let's see how crazy I can get with this answer.
Yeah. No more trash can turkeys. What is your, no, how about this? Where would you choose to live if you had to only choose, locations based on video game starting locations? So where would be your ideal place to live and your choices are only limited to video game starting locations?
Man, it's not even video games, they're starting locations.
Yes.
God damn.
We're talking like the Pallet Towns, Kokiri Forest.
Yeah, because that really wrecks a lot of things, because the starting towns are usually pretty boring, too.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know what? We'll go Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, boy. Well, isn't that just like in the heart of the city?
It depends on how you start. If you're the Outlander, whatever the hell, the Nomad, that one starts out in the outskirts. But after that, if you're like the street person or the corpo scum like I was, you start out in the city. In Night City! That would actually be pretty horrible, but yeah, sure. I'll start in Night City, the starting town. I guess it's better than saying like Steelwater or whatever from Saints Row, because that should be even wilder.
Yeah. I wouldn't want somewhere where like cartoonish violence or over-the-top antics would just kill me instantly. You know, like it would need to be somewhere like resourceful, but also non-boring, but also safe, but you know.
Yeah, that's part where boring kicks in, because it was like, oh man, Stardew Valley would be pretty cool, or like one of those games. I'm like, I wouldn't actually like farming. No.
Yeah. I was thinking the Harvest Moon, like a Harvest Moon house, but then it's usually always dilapidated and you have to build it up to even get it into a decent working function.
Yeah, you know, tripping out on a lot of brain drops. There we go.
Cool. Okay. Well,
all right. Yep.
We got your answer locked in. But well, today we want to answer a question. This is going to be like an evergreen question. I'm going to probably ask like every single guest I have on, because I think this is just a pretty solid question to ask for dialogue reasons, just hearing different perspectives and ideas, rambling. Anywho, what would you, or give us a GOAT title in your opinion, something you consider one of the greatest of all time. So like I also want you to like, you know,
no,
it doesn't have to be one that you're like, we're just like critically or like universally trying to consider that, though you can name one of those, but this could easily just be like a personal game that you consider one of the greatest of all time. So,
Yeah. So I think I misunderstood the question. I was like, well, Goat Simulator, obviously. Greatest of all time. Oh, shit.
The only Goat game I can think of is Goat Simulator. So yeah, I'm stuck.
I mean, the one game that sticks out, because I guess I got hooked on it, and it was at an earlier age. It had secrets. It had great controls. I mean, I'm not going to say it had a story. It barely did, or maybe there's a lot more that I didn't understand, but Star Fox 64, it had a lot to it for a game of that time. There could be some challenges, like you could not maneuver through things and go through one path, and it had like branching routes based on your skill. But it had me hooked. It had me challenged. It had a lot to it.
Yeah, that's a great game. That's definitely one of my top favorite games. I don't know where that ranks though. Like I feel like I have such an established list, and then like I realized Star Fox is not like in my like known top 10, but it probably is close. It's like, I would say I can guarantee you it's been my top 25. It may even be top 15 range, you know, but that's a solid game for sure.
I give it a little bit more of a bump because I don't think we ever really, I actually don't know if the multiplayer was good or not. I don't think that was ever really delved into. And I don't know if you had your own screens, if it expanded beyond that. if it'd be more fun doing multiplayer in that game, but at least from the core standpoint, that was a great game at the time. I'm sure nowadays, kind of like when you played the more recent releases of that series, or I think Star Fox was tied to a different series, and I can't even remember what that was called, but those didn't work out as well.
What do you mean, like the Star Fox Adventure game?
That you mean, no, it was something else altogether. It was like a whole different first title, but for some reason I remember Star Fox being tied to it. I think it was a Wii U game.
Oh, that was like Starlink or something like that. That was a third-party game. Is that what you're thinking of?
I think it's Starlink. Yeah, because it had Star something, but I could have swore.
So that was a multi-platform release, and that was on other systems, and it had like super amiibo functionality, where like you had an external ship that you could buy like real, like in real life toy like parts that would augment and change that ship, and that would be the in-game ship you use in your game. Like,
oh, it was okay. It was a Wii U version, but not the core. Yeah. Okay. I completely misunderstood when I was like, do I need to buy this game? A Star Fox game? Why did I hear about this shit? And I was like,
you probably should have. I mean, for many times that bundle was sold for like $5 in clearance places, like at like Target and Best Buy and stuff like that. And yeah, the Wii U one just had an R-Wing, you know, so you could like play with like an R-Wing looking ship in the game, as it was just like a space shooter style adventure game.
And you know what? For some reason, I don't think it was good voice acting, but I remember the voice acting of Star Fox 64 to be passable.
Oh, no, I think good, it was good.
But passable for that time. Maybe good for that time. But
I think it was good for that time.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was good for that time. And I think that like it's just, you know, like, yeah, if you're trying to think of like through that game with like a modern lens, like, yeah, it wasn't as exciting per se, or didn't have as much like content, you know, as like maybe a modern game would. But in that moment it did, like in that moment it was like a really solid like action game. And like you said, like the branching pathways and everything, like it had this like really high level of replayability, because, you know, that was like pre-internet days for most people. I mean, some people, you know, had access to the internet and whatever, but like 98, I think, is when it was released. But
yeah, I don't know.
Like being able to, that's top of the dome right there. So if we Google that and we find out it's 98, that's just straight pure knowledge of just natural brain right there.
All right, well, I'll look it up then. So sorry, my guy. You're off by 1 year. April 27th, 1997. Oh, wait, was that Japan
that's
or
gotta be
America?
Japan.
You know what? That's Japan. You're right. A year later, probably.
Could only
all
been
the
a
accolades
of
to you. Great job.
97, really? Wow. Okay. I thought it was a little bit later for sure.
Oh, NA in June. Yeah, it was only a month later. Never mind. No accolades. Yeah.
Well, 97's a strong year. I mean, that's a big, big year right there for games. So Star Fox joining the phrase, and really, really cool. But the branching pathways, like pre-internet, you had like, you know, you just wanted to figure out like, what did you need to do? Like kill all the enemies up before a certain point, like not take damage before a certain point, reach a certain score at the end of the stage, defeat a boss in the right order. Like there's like a lot of things that you could do. That train level where you had to like hit all the specific track or switches and all that stuff.
Just randomly like fly through the rings or like through the architecture of the land.
Yeah.
That was the first level or whatever for Falco to be all.
Yeah.
You got pretty smooth flying, Fox, or whatever the hell he said.
Yeah. But yeah, there was a lot to that. And then so like having the branching pathways, and that also took you to like stages that were like a harder challenge. You had like the extra character, Cat, who you'd never see easy route and everything.
You would have never seen her.
Like not at all. And I thought it was like super solid for the time. Like the story was kind of like light, sure, but it still had like a beginning, middle, and end. You know, you were trying to... Your father was killed, and years later, you're, you know, fighting against the same villain or the reemergence of the villain who potentially killed your father. And
Andross is weird. I don't know, man. That one's weird. And I think you see your dead dad or whatever as well.
You see this?
Yeah, it got a little
specter
weird.
Of
the
your father as you helps you fly out of the exploding, you know, center core. But yeah, I loved the gameplay, loved like everything about Star Fox. That's a solid pick for sure. Multiplayer, I do remember we played it enough. Like we were together playing that a lot, and I believe doing like a certain like whatever, like I don't remember the exact unlock, but you unlock the ability to run around on foot, and like that was like a bazooka. Yeah,
that's what I remember. You had on foot, in the tank, and flying.
Yeah,
and it's like, why the F would I want to be on foot? This is insane. Like, why on earth would I want to be just fodder for these vehicles?
Well, I tagged these with explicit, so you're allowed to swear. Just FYI.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, my phone just a moment ago censored me as well. Yeah, that's so true. I can't say the H word anymore either. So.
Heel, yeah.
Heel, yeah. Let's go, boys.
So, yeah, Star Fox 64. That's cool. As the series went on, just as like a follow-up kind of question, as the series went on, did you ever like... I mean, obviously, you're picking that one probably because it's your favorite in this series, but like, was there other games in the series you also found like enjoyment out of and were a fan of playing?
I did play Star Fox Zero. I was enjoying it a bit, but it did deal with like the motion controls as well, and I didn't really think that tied in that well. I just wanted a more core flying shooter that I remember from the past.
Yeah.
And the same thing with that one. Like, the story did not matter. It was all just about the flying and shooting.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if it was the fidelity of it, but I don't know. It also just, it felt weird. It felt weird flying. Like, it didn't feel smooth for some reason. At least that's how I remember it.
Yeah, I'm kind of vaguely remembering there may have been like a 30 frames per second like cap on it rather than 60.
That could have been it, yeah.
Which is also an interesting choice. The other one that was I thought was really fun and it kind of overlooked is that Star Fox Assault on the GameCube. It wasn't, I think Namco like co-developed it and everything, but it was just a good action game, and I think sometimes gets like considered kind of like a throwaway Star Fox game, but there is some entertainment in that for sure.
That's weird that I missed that one altogether.
Yeah, well, you had Star Fox Adventures on the GameCube as well, so you did get kind of double-dosed with Star Fox, but neither of them were, like, a core follow-up to Star Fox 64. They both kind of, like, tried their own thing a little bit.
For as much as, like, Nintendo, I missed the GameCube era on a lot of core games, like the Metroid Prime series and all that. Missed that. Star Fox Adventures and all that. Missed that. I don't know what I was doing at that time. Probably World of Warcraft, but completely missed it.
Tales of Symphonia, you were stuck on that. You only played one
game. Oh, yeah, I didn't miss that one. Yeah. That was a great game.
All right.
Sold consoles.
Sold consoles, yes. We're not
console,
putting a number on
singular.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
But people love that. I mean, that game was just remastered. I mean, it's a successful Tales game. But this is about Tales. This is about Star Fox, so... Thanks for the
I changed
share.
My answer. Tales is important. All right.
That could be a future goat answer for you.
The designs are making me say this. No.
That's a deep reference to Tales of Symphonia. He's trying to reference it. But we're not going to allow it. Not going to allow it. I was going to share one too. What was I thinking of? I think like a goat game for me. Like just for me personally, like Mass Effect 2 is like my favorite in that series, and like that's just like I don't know, that just had like the right balance, the right pacing. It kind of sanded down the rough edges of the first game, like leaned a little bit more into like some like action and more like fulfilling combat, but then like the stories and the characters like within, like it was just structured in a way that you got like these like episodic kind of like character arcs, and as you played through their stories you gained their like trust and like buy into you as like the commander to go on the suicide mission at the end, and you kind of see like, you know, if you gain their loyalty, like they potentially have the chance to survive, because if not they could die. And I just remember the stakes being like higher, and then I also knew that your save from Mass Effect 2 was going to roll into Mass Effect 3, so I didn't want some of the characters that like I grew to like really like enjoy their arcs and enjoy their storylines to like die on me. So like just playing through that game, just really like milking out like every like drop from it, was just awesome. Just great balance of just sci-fi and adventure, and really good writing and just really good pacing. So I don't remember if you've ever been a big Mass Effect fan or not. I don't remember if we've ever really talked about this a ton.
There's a series that has been on my list of to play games I've never played. And it might be because people have told me it's effectively what goes on. And you're like, oh, I want people to live or die. I was like, well, someone has to die. I mean, from what I understand, at the end of that, someone has to sacrifice themselves in that second one. No, but maybe so, that was their story arc.
No, yeah, yeah. You can make it out of there with no one dying.
That's wild.
Yeah, like, and that's, it's actually not a difficult path to go on either. Yeah, it's, yeah, they're really good. It was cool because it was like the Shenmue idea, like the promise of Shenmue of being able to theoretically had those games been able to like all been released on the Dreamcast, like take your save file and keep your items, your money, like the things that you had in each of the games and kind of carry them forward. Yeah. That never really got to be completely fulfilled, but like Mass Effect was able to on one platform, like, you know, you started a character, you made like the way they looked, the decisions, good, bad choices. Yeah. That all played out.
Did it keep it all the same or did it do like a Dragon Age did where it just like made the tapestry your past or like The Witcher did, like, oh, these were the choices that were made, but you still have to recreate everything and start fresh.
Yeah, I mean, there's creative reasons to like have you like reset your character per se, but like the choices you made, like there is a choice you make in the first game about like saving this like potentially nearly extinct alien race or like eliminating the last queen of it because of the wrongdoing that it did. And it doesn't have much impact in the second one, though you do hear about like a little like off screen kind of commentary about like that. But in the third game, they can show up as in the third game, you're trying to find as many allies for like a big giant global battle type of thing. And so this, you know, alien race will show up and actually give you a strength in numbers as allies in the third game because you made a choice in the first game whether to save them or eliminate them. So, yeah, it's cool.
I just realized it's probably due to the massive popularity of Witcher 3. But I was like the only person I knew to ever play Witcher 1.
Mm.
I don't know why I didn't say that game was a fucking goat game. That shit was awesome. But anyway, yeah, Star Fox still cool.
Star Fox 64 today, Tales of Symphonia, and Witcher tomorrow.
Yeah, got a big ass list. Depends on the day. It depends on what synapses are firing.
how many beers he's had. Yeah, that's
only three tonight. Come on.
Well, that will do it then. I think we're both able to kind of share a little bit.
For me, I got another beer coming up. No.
I would recommend for you. I mean, I don't know. You always have like a library of things to kind of play through, you know.
But I've wanted to play Mass Effect. I have. Yeah, I've heard a lot of people talking really high, even though I think Andromeda people got negative on, but looking back on it, retrospect, like actually it was a good game.
Yeah, there were some cool ideas in it. It's just I think for the seeds they planted and the things they did in that first trilogy, there was I think player expectation and hope that wasn't fulfilled just based on like, you know, false expectations. But if you just try to rate that as like a standalone game and everything, there were some cool redeeming factors about it for sure. There's a rumored follow up. Even still coming, you know, for Mass Effect, which I'm curious to see what that will do. But
more Shepard content.
Shepard, love those games, dude.
Wait, I'm thinking about Lost. Jack Shepard,
another good Shepard. I have an affinity for Shepard characters. That's what it is.
What's your religious upbringing?
I was a lost Shepard. cool. Well, thanks, Thomas, for joining the party. And we will talk again on a future episode.
Awesome.